the Boston Public Library in Copley Square, and this is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and then there were two.
Last night, after months of running, campaigning, and debating, State Representative Marty Walsh and Boston City Councilor John Connolly emerged from a field of 12 candidates. One of them will become the next mayor of Boston.
Walsh was the top vote-getter, and he celebrated the victory last night in Dorchester.
Tonight's a great start, but it's only a start. We've got so much more to do in the next 6 weeks. Are you ready?
And John Connolly finished a close second. Here he is last night celebrating in Roxbury, where he talked about the need to improve Boston schools and more.
But our campaign is defined by an even bigger idea, an idea that says that this city never stands as tall as when we stand together.
Election Day is November 5th, just 6 weeks away. Coming up this hour, John Connolly and Marty Walsh will both be joining us. And listeners, whether you're in Copley Square or listening to us on the radio, we want to hear from you. If you have questions for one of these two men, one of which whom will be Boston's next mayor, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK.
And later in the show, a special musical treat. The band The Low Anthem will be joining us to perform live. So if you can, come on down to Copley Square, join this special Public Square edition of Radio Boston. But first, let's begin with some analysis of last night's results and look forward to the November 5th election. And to help us do that, WBUR's political reporter David Scharfenberg is with us. Hey, David, good to have you.
Thanks.
And Democratic political consultant and former state rep Susan Tracy. Hi, Susan. Great to see you back.
Thanks, Anthony. Hi.
So these two campaigns, I'll start with you, David, seem to be the most well-funded. In the end, was it all about the money and the ground game?
Money matters, for sure. Both of these guys were able to have some presence on television, and money helps pay for the ground game to some extent. But there were a lot of volunteers cranking for both of these guys, and I think it was really more about those foot soldiers, particularly in Marty Walsh's case, helping to drive up his totals.
Now, Susan Connolly, John Connolly had topped all the polls leading up to this race. He then finished second. What's your take on this result?
It was such a close second. It's hard to say one is, you know, did phenomenally better than the other. I just think the numbers are too close. I think to David's point, I think Marty might have had more boots on the ground, as they say, with the union support that he had. But I think it's statistically too close for that to matter.
And David and Susan, we've heard a lot about Mayor Menino not weighing in with any endorsement so far. In fact, we've heard that these aren't two particularly beloved men to him. You know, there seems to be some chilliness there. So what's the likelihood that Menino does endorse somebody, put his machine behind somebody, or will he just wait this one out and see who wins without his support?
I think it's pretty unlikely. He didn't get involved in the preliminary. No particular signs he's going to get involved in the final election here. John Connolly looked to hop in against Mr. Menino before he declared that he was not running again. So no love lost there, and not for Mr. Walsh either, I don't think. So I'd be frankly surprised if he got all that involved here.
I agree. I just don't see him getting involved either.
You know, we had relatively low turnout yesterday, despite how momentous this election is, a new mayor for the first time in 20 years. And we heard, David, we heard you yesterday say on Radio Boston that that may be because people felt overwhelmed by 12 candidates, among other things. Do you think that now that we're down to two, we'll see enthusiasm pick up among the electorate?
I do. I don't think the electorate was that tuned out, to be honest with you, yesterday. I think it was 31% of the vote based on a base of people who came out to vote in a presidential election. It's not that different than the 1993 numbers, and quite, in fact, it's a little bit bigger than happened in the 93 race. So it's not as small, I think, as people make it out to be. And I do think it's just easier to pay attention when there are two candidates.
I'd like to ask you both, I'll start with you, David, just about where do you think this race is? What separates these two candidates, and what's this race going to come down to?
Well, I think John Connolly, who's now seated at my left here, has really built kind of a citywide coalition, as I'm sure he'll tell you. He's spent, 6 years now on the city council, worked on education issues in particular, has met a lot of parents, and really built up a pretty good citywide coalition in the race here. Marty Walsh did very well in his strongholds of Dorchester and South Boston. I think he had a 3-1 advantage on John Connolly. But in the rest of the city, John had about a 2-1 advantage against Marty Walsh. That'll be his strength heading in. And both of these guys are really going to have to find a way to expand on their current coalitions and seal the deal.
Yeah, and Susan, same question to you. Sort of what does this race come down to in the end?
I think for, and John's sitting to my right now.
and we're going to be introducing John in just a moment.
You know, I think that the minority community is critical, and I think reaching out to the minority community, progressive voters are going to be critical to this race. The support of your opponents, I'm sure John and Marty have both been on the phone all day calling those the other 10 candidates in this race. So I think whoever can quickly bring together the other factions in this race is probably the candidate who will prevail in November.
David Scharfenberg is a political reporter for WBUR, and Susan Tracy is a Democratic political consultant and a former state rep. David and Susan, stay with us for this hour. We want to come back to you. And very briefly, we'll be going to John Conley, who is now sitting with us on Boylston Street outside the Boston Public Library. We are live in Copley Square. We'll be talking to John Conley and Marty Walsh. And again, you can call in and let us know what you'd like to ask, or you can ask them at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston live in Copley Square. From outside the Boston Public Library in Copley Square, this is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. For the first time in 20 years, Bostonians will elect a new mayor not named Menino. He'll be either State Representative Marty Walsh from Dorchester or City Councilor John Connolly from West Roxbury.
The two candidates were the big winners last night, pulling away from a crowded field of 12. Now they have just 6 weeks to make their case to Boston voters. And they're going to begin doing that right now. And we're joined by one of the winners, Boston City Councilor John Connolly. And John, thanks so much for coming down to Copley Square. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me on. It's great to be here.
And State Rep Marty Walsh is in a formal session at the State House today. This is quite a key session. We'll be voting on repealing the tech tax, but we expect him to join us by phone a little bit from now. So listeners, again, would like to hear your thoughts. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And John Conley, again, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
You're probably a man who's going on very little sleep right now.
I slept about 3 hours. I made phone calls to primarily other candidates until about 2 a.m. Charles Clemens and I talked at about 1:30 a.m. That was the last live voice I had. I did texts and voicemails until about 2 a.m. About three and a half hours of sleep. Maybe I hit four. Back on the phone. Got an hour at the gym, back on the phone. Council meeting, back on the phone here.
And there's really not a lot of time to rest and recuperate because you have a final election in 6 weeks.
I don't feel tired. I'm sure I'm going to crash at some point here, but I am energized, and I will use every minute of these 6 weeks to make my case to Boston.
So, superficially at least, you and Marty Walsh have many similarities. I'm wondering how you're going to distinguish yourself for voters who need to decide between the two of you.
I think voters figure that stuff out on their own, and for me, it's not about me and Marty Walsh. It's about me talking about my vision for Boston and the things I'm proud of. I'm proud of my record on the council, particularly pushing for school reform. But when I look at my campaign last night, we scored numbers across this entire city. We finished first in seven neighborhoods, I believe. And so it was not just one section of the city. We were never about that. I won in the South End last night. I'm really proud of that. I was a close second in Beacon Hill and Back Bay. And it's driven by the message, transform our schools, that opens up the brightest future possible, and that links to safer streets and a stronger economy.
And education reform really has been your signature platform item. It's won you many supporters with among the parent community. It's won you the ire of the Boston Teachers Union. How do you broaden beyond that theme to attract even more voters?
I think we've talked about all the issues through this whole campaign. I'm going to continue to do that. I use education as a connector. And I'll put it this way, a 16-year-old dropout becomes one of the most likely people in Boston to be incarcerated. So that is a public safety and a public health issue, and it's an individual that we have a moral obligation to help. And I want to make sure we keep that 16-year-old in school. Now, if we're going to keep him in school, we've got to make sure we're going to get him prepared for a great job. So that has a direct link to our economy. So I've talked about jobs, economy, safe and healthy neighborhoods throughout this whole campaign. I just connect it back to schools at the end of the day. So I'm going to continue to talk about every issue, but beyond that, I think I was one of the strong voices here championing a new look at how we invest in the arts in Boston. I've been outspoken on my advocacy for improving our bike infrastructure across the city. So I'm going to hit all of these issues over the campaign, but I'll connect it back to education every time, and I won't apologize for that.
John, I want to ask you about an interesting difference between you and Marty Walsh. Of course, he's a state rep. You're a veteran city hall councilor. How does this shape and define your differences?
Well, you know, again, I think Marty brings a lot of great experience to the table. But I'll just say I've had 6 years on the city council and sat on the Ways and Means Committee for all 6 years. That means I've done six budgets up close with the Menino administration, learned a lot from the mayor about how you manage the city from that fiscal standpoint, learned and watched the mayor craft these budgets. We would review them in the council on my committee that I sat on, you know, always focus on the reserve ratio, focus on where the interest rates are, and focus on our unpaid, unfunded liabilities. That's where you have to start when you're going to build a budget that's going to make a difference in people's lives. That's something that experience you get as a city councilor when you work on six city budgets.
I want to ask you, too, a question about the sort of changing complexion of Boston. During the preliminary campaign, a lot was made of the fact that Boston is a much more diverse city than it once was. There were candidates who represented that diversity, and yet the city ended up going with two white guys of Irish extraction. How do you make the case that, you know, you represent this new Boston?
I wouldn't have been in the final. I wouldn't be in this final if I didn't have voters from every walk of life supporting me. I'm proud of my strong LGBT record and the LGBT community backing me. I'm proud of the voters who were behind me last night across every neighborhood. The numbers show that, but I'll tell you how I see it, where I see it symbolically. We got a lot of parents on my campaign, and we have a lot of baby carriers and infants that show up in our campaign headquarters. But what I love about it is I've got a mom in West Roxbury knocking on doors for me who's never worked on a campaign before, and I have a mom in Mattapan who's never worked on a campaign before knocking on doors for me. And it's about seeing all of these connections. And I talked last night, we had on stage a woman named Barbara Williams who's a dear friend of mine. Our daughters go to school together. And Barbara is from Dorchester, and you know her, someone who she basically lived with as a brother was gunned down in a Walgreens parking lot last spring, and that was a reflection of the way we've devalued Black and Latino lives in this city, particularly young males. But we're all connected in this city, and I think we can only solve these problems if we work together. And I think I've reflected that in 6 years of work on the council, but I'm going to show Boston that that's who I am, working together for Boston's future.
John, it's been commented on that in the run-up to the primary, it was actually a very harmonious, warm, and cordial campaign. A lot of the 12 of you knew each other, you played sports together, you lived near each other. I noticed in a lot of the Twitter traffic last night going on that someone said, when will the attack ads begin? Is this going to become an uglier race now that it's down to you and Marty Walsh?
I hope not, and I certainly don't think it will. I think Marty's going to run a positive campaign. I am certainly going to run a positive campaign, and I think that's what the voters of Boston want. I'm really proud of being part of that group of 12 that ran a campaign unlike anything we've seen. It certainly wasn't the Brown-Warren race, and it was great.
Well, speaking of those other candidates who didn't make it through the preliminary election, what would you carry forward if you became the next mayor? In other words, did you pick up ideas from these other guys that impressed you that you'd like to carry
on? Or maybe who would you carry forward
as
well?
I'll tell you, I will take all 10, but I'd say this. You don't want to violate that rule and say one and forget another, but I'll go break it. Look, Mike Ross and the focus on innovation, incredible. John Barros and the connections between the struggles of people in this city and the ways that you can connect that to economic development, to summer jobs for young people. I mean, this is that's a guy who sees all of the connections. Bill Walczak, so substantive on policy and how we can connect our health centers to better, stronger neighborhoods. Just great, great policy all around from so many of these candidates. And if I start Rob Consalvo, I won't end because he's got so many good ideas on from his rubber sidewalks on through. So I am definitely going to take the pieces of their campaigns and try and talk about that in this campaign.
And I want to mention, you mentioned John Barros. We have John Barros out on the sidewalk here. He's going to join us a bit later.
I gave him a big hug when I saw him over there. So I offered to do the other councilors' dishes tonight if you want.
So. John, we've got some folks listening out on the street today. We've invited them to chime in with a question or two. We've got Pat from the South End who's got a question for you.
Congratulations, Councilor, on your performance yesterday.
Thank you, Pat.
I was hoping you could share with us your vision for public arts in the city.
Sure. Thanks. So I want
to question.
I want to be a champion of the arts arts community. And, you know, we invest $1 million a year in the arts here in Boston. But you go to Chicago and Los Angeles, they start at $30 million. So I would like to free some money up in the budget to invest more in arts substantially. But what I want to see is a robust public arts agenda in this city. So we've got storefront theater, pop-up art galleries, and everything you can imagine. I believe if we empower Boston's arts community, I want them to find the signature for Boston. I don't want to imitate other cities, but I want to empower that arts community. So the key way we do it is we elevate arts and culture to a cabinet-level department in the city of Boston. Right now it's arts and tourism, and the focus is really just on special events, some of them not even related to the arts. So I want to let that happen. I want to empower an arts community to come up with the agenda. And I think if the city fronts a little money on this, we'll see private donors and institutional donors come and support it. They just want to know City Hall will back a robust, vibrant arts life.
This is WBUR's Radio Boston. We are broadcasting live from Boylston Street and Copley Square outside the Boston Public Library. We're speaking with John Connolly, one of the finalists in the Boston mayoral preliminary last night. He'll be running against Marty Walsh, or he is running against Marty Walsh. One of them will become mayor. We have another person on the sidewalk who has a question. This is Nina from the South End. And Nina, you have a question for John Connolly.
Hi, congratulations.
Thank you.
I want to know what you're going to do about homelessness in Boston, specifically single mothers who have children and are homeless.
Sure. So our first-time homeless families are on the rise, as it sounds like the questioner knows. You know, my daughter goes to the Trotter School on Humboldt Ave in Roxbury. We have one of the highest percentages of homeless families and homeless students that attend the Trotter School. This is a really serious issue, and these are, again, the voiceless and powerless members of Boston when we talk about our homeless families. So a few pieces. One, it's the housing first model is the key, that we're going to get someone into actual real stable housing as quickly as possible. Now, a lot of folks will go right to funding on that because you need a full wraparound, and that is an issue. But the fact is, a mayor can make some basic changes to zoning to help allow more housing first models to get out there. And then we can link them to family specific or to other populations, whether it's a homeless veteran or whoever it is. But you can talk to folks working in our shelters, you know, many of whom are more multi-service now than anyone would imagine. But they'll tell you, we could do more housing first right now if the city zoning process weren't so restrictive. And so I certainly want to champion that as a mayor.
John, another question on your ed reform platform. Yep. You know, you have a lot of teachers, administrators, probably quite nervous. I mean, you say it's going to be a very different school system. Give us a sense of what will be different. What should people be nervous about? What should people be excited about? What will be different?
I'll come back to my daughter's school again. And I'll just say, you know, we always talk about Orchard Gardens, and it's an awesome school. You know, and that great picture of President Obama with one group of Orchard Gardens students. But there's another great turnaround. It's the Trotter where my daughter goes 4 years ago, rumored to be closed today, a level one school or one of the best schools in Boston and the state. We have the formula. We know what to do. We've got to get a central bureaucracy out of the way. And so I want to make that a lean, thin bureaucracy. And so I will make changes there.
Does that mean people at Court Street will lose jobs?
I think that we do a top-to-bottom forensic audit, but I will say that it is a top-heavy bureaucracy, and that needs to change. I want to make deep cuts to it. I want to take the resources and put them at the school site level. And, you know, these are tough conversations to have, but if we're going to put our children first, we're going to try and give every child a high-quality education, close the achievement gap. The one thing we can't do is to keep doing what we're doing today. We've got to make some changes.
You have spent about $1.2 million on the race as of September 15th. You turned down money from an outside education group after an outcry from other candidates. Would you accept outside money in the final leg of the race?
I stand by my statements all along, and I don't want outside money coming into the race.
Now, we heard Marty Walsh say this morning to WBUR's Bob Oakes he will not turn down outside money. Does that change your thinking about that in any way at all?
You know what? Today I stand by everything I've said, you know, so far. I don't think that's going to change. And, you know, I made that decision for my campaign, and that's what I've thought about through today.
Mm. John, a different issue. I had a story air on WBUR this morning that was about the needs and sort of the needs in Copley Square and the Back Bay for what they want or hope out of a new mayor. And I talked to a man named Jim Hill, who with his wife owns a store called Kitchenwares on Newbury Street, and this is what he had to say.
There's not enough supply of housing at any price level in the Back Bay. even if you say, well, if you're looking for a two-bedroom condo in the Back Bay and it costs $800,000 and you have to repair it, even those are in short supply, let alone things that are more affordable for everyone that works around here.
And John, let alone $800,000 rehabs, we're talking about rentals in moderate neighborhoods that are now approaching $2,000 a month. So what do we do to, as we've heard many candidates say, not make Boston the next Manhattan?
Yep. So we need a real middle market housing plan. I've talked about this from day one in this campaign. This connects to all these other pieces, from the schools to any job creation plan has got to be premised or directly linked to a good housing plan. So I definitely want to have a focus from the BRA through an independent plan that puts an emphasis and focus on how you connect more affordable housing to more middle market housing. There's ways to do it. The key is you got to combine the tax credits on the affordable end with a real strategy to lower construction costs. And if you want to do that, you're going to have to expedite approvals based on people who will build to the plan, not based on who you know or navigating BRA. But if you're going to go in and build middle market housing, we'll expedite approvals. That'll lower construction costs. We've got to get comfortable with more height and density in appropriate places. When you do that, you bring down the construction costs. And the last thing is inappropriate places, and I always have to put my asterisk here, not South Boston or Charlestown. We've got to experiment with the parking requirement. If we do that, we bring the prices down more. But if people want to be real about middle market housing, we've got to have these conversations. What I'd like to do as mayor is pick some transit nodes, experiment with the pieces I just talked about, see if they work, and if they do, then we talk about how we can scale it up. But that's the only way you're going to create real middle market housing.
And on parking, you mean build housing that does not have parking that comes with it.
That's right. Again, inappropriate places, but that actually will bring the cost down the most. That's where it becomes cost prohibitive. We've got to recognize we live in a city now where people don't own a car necessarily, want a bike to work, and are willing to share cars. And we've got to recognize that we've got a changing population in this city that will embrace that. But that's the only way we're going to allow people to find moderately priced homes.
John Connolly, last question. And, we've been talking a lot of policy. We've been hearing about it for last few months. When it comes to electing a mayor or any sort of public office holder, the public has to be comfortable with a guy. So I'm asking for a detail about you that maybe you haven't had a chance to reveal, something personal, something even surprising about John Connolly.
I don't know what I haven't had a chance to reveal yet. I talked about liking Soundgarden in college, and it blew up on Twitter, I had my alternative rock days in college. I was a Patriots season ticket holder for a number of years. I was at their first Super Bowl. I love the Patriots, but I actually had to give the tickets up because when you're a city councilor, if it's an election year, you never have a Sunday free. And then when it's a non-election year, you are not going to tell your wife that you are headed to Foxborough for 8 hours while your kids are at home. So I sacrificed the Patriots tickets gladly, but I am still a passionate Patriots fan.
All right, that's John Connolly. He's a Boston City Councilor, one of two candidates who's running for mayor of Boston right now. He was the co-winner of the preliminary election last night. John Connolly, thanks for coming in, and good luck to you in the weeks ahead.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone now from Beacon Hill is State Representative Marty Walsh. The House is in session today, so he is unable to be here in Copley Square, but he has ducked out in a recess or a lull. And Representative Walsh, we appreciate you taking time to do that for us.
Thank you for having me today.
I also want to note that part of the reason you felt it was incredibly important to be there today is that there is a vote on the repeal of the tech tax, this notorious tax that seems like it's going to die long before it was alive. Could you? Is there a headline on whether that vote has happened and what the outcome was?
No, we're working on it right now. It's going to happen a little bit. This was a piece of legislation that got into the transportation bill that was written incorrectly, I believe, and had unintended consequences. So we're going to repeal it, and I think that I know that's the right thing to do.
So you also, as we just said, to talk to John Connolly about, I think you were up sort of dawn, pre-dawn campaigning. You have 6 weeks left. Same question for you that I asked John Connolly, which is, in some ways, the two of you can seem similar to people. I'm wondering, how do you distinguish yourself and try to make yourself the winner in November?
I mean, one of the ways, I think, we are similar in a lot of ways, and John's a friend, and I've known John for a long time, but I think one of the ways that we differ is that I have a 16-year career on Beacon Hill, a legislative career that I've had the opportunity to work on legislation as far as job creation, work on legislation as far as creating housing, work on the issues around education reform. Actually, the education reform that allowed the underperforming schools in Boston to turn around was legislation that I worked on and supported to make sure that we gave the tools to the superintendent to be able to make changes in schools.
Marty Walsh, it's Anthony Brooks. I want to ask you also a same question we asked John Connolly. You mentioned, obviously, you're a state rep. He's a city councilor. How does that inform what kind of differences you bring to this campaign and what kind of mayors you would be?
I mean, I think to some degree it informs what type of candidate we are. I think it's very difficult to understand what type of mayor we're going to be as far as our legislative records. But, you know, certainly the campaign is a better feel for that, better taste for that. You know, I've spent the last 4.5 months going all over the city, working, you know, 16, 17 hours a day, talking to people about the issues that I care about. And I think that people generally know as they vote, and as we get down to the final here, they're certainly going to know there's going to be some certain differences between John and myself and I think, you know, we've done a good job in the primary, or a decent job in the primary, of getting that word out to people, and we're going to continue to do that through the final on November 5th.
We are talking to you right now from Boylston Street, where just over 5 months ago the Boston Marathon was bombed, of course. We can see the finish line. We can see the Marathon Sports Store from where we're sitting, where the first bomb went off. What do you think the city needs to do to guard against these kinds of attacks, and as well as to remain committed to this tradition of openness that everybody values so much?
I mean, I think it's a very difficult task for the city. Certainly, the police department needs to have an open line of communication with the FBI and with the federal government to make sure that we know who's in our city, or at least who they know is in our city. In 2002, I became the chairman of Homeland Security here in the State House. And in my time there, at the time, there was a lot of discussion around LNG tankers coming into Boston Harbor and LNG tankers off the Southeast Expressway, the gas tank, if you will. And it was really about preparation. How do you prepare to make sure that doesn't happen in Boston? And, you know, we really have to depend clearly on our law enforcement agency and technology, because we have to keep Boston open and free-flowing and allowing people the opportunity to go and enjoy themselves. The tragedy on Marathon Monday was horrific. You know, we lost three lives. One of those lives was a little boy who it was a member of the charter school I'm on the board at. His sister's also is a student at the school. Just a very difficult, because that hit home for us here in Boston. I think the one thing that we have never experienced in Boston is that type of attack. And I think a lot more people are more cognizant now and keeping an eye on what their surroundings and what's going on. And it's not a good thing that we have to do that, but I think a lot more people in Boston are paying a little more alertful to that.
Up to that, Ed Davis, police commissioner, announced that he's going to resign at the end of the year. What will you be looking for in the next commissioner?
I mean, I'm going to look for a police commissioner that certainly cares about our neighborhoods. I think we have to look at strengthening our neighborhood policing. In certain parts of our city, their crime has not gone down. Gun trafficking and gun violence has not gone down. We've had, I think, about 140-something shootings since Marathon Monday. The statistics show different, that crime has gone down in our city, but we really need a police force and a captain a superintendent that's going to put a lot of emphasis on some of those inner-city neighborhoods that we need to make sure that they feel safe and protected. We also have to look at the diversity of our police force. You know, the command staff is not diverse, and that is important. People, it has come up several times on the campaign trail, and you know, I think some of the community has lost faith in the police, and that's not right. Nobody should lose faith in our police department. They should be proud of it. And, you know, under my leadership as mayor of the city of Boston, I'll make sure that the police force reflects and the leadership reflects the community.
Marty Walsh, you are strongly affiliated with unions. You've been a labor executive. You've had enormous union support, although some of the unions haven't been thrilled with your stance on backing ed reform and sort of your stance on charter schools, your support for charter schools. But that union affiliation can be an advantage and a liability. I'm wondering how you balance those two.
Well, you know, I'm proud to represent working class people up here on Beacon Hill in my whole life. My father, when he came to this country from Ireland, he became a laborer, and and I followed him into the ranks of the laborers, and I learned about the importance of workers' rights and protecting workers and earning a good wage. But also on Beacon Hill, I also understand the importance of taking tough stands when you have to take a stand. And I felt that there's been a few occasions up here where I've taken the opposite stand of labor. And as mayor of the city of Boston, there's going to be more. I mean, I have to, you know, when we're talking about negotiating and contracts and making sure that we have get a good fair deal for the taxpayers of the city of Boston, I'm the right person for that job because I understand the other side of the table, if you will, and I have those relationships that I'll be able to use those relationships and leverage them into good opportunities for the city of Boston. Right now, we're looking at a potential police contract that's going to be funded and retroactive pay, and we have other contracts not funded. We're looking at about a $200 million liability for the city of Boston for the next mayor, and we can't have that. You know, we're not New York. New York has a $3 billion liability, but, you know, we shouldn't let it get to the arbitration area. We should these contracts should be settled before we get to arbitration, and I know I'm the person that can get this thing done, get these contracts done without having to go on to arbitration and put an enormous burden on the taxpayer.
Marty, I want to play you a piece of tape. I spoke with a lot of people in the Back Bay last week for a story I was doing about what the Back Bay wants from a new mayor. And the president of the Back Bay Association, a woman named Meg Meinzer-Cohen, really echoed the frustrations of a lot of people when she said that so much permitting is required for businesses that it can be almost farcical. So here's one example she gave.
Someone wanted to serve Italian pastries, and we called Inspectional Services, and we were told that you can't put the pastries out on a tray and leave it on a table. But if a person came and passed the pastries and cut them in half, then we wouldn't need a permit.
And we also heard people talk about relatively minor events that required literally almost 100 permits. And I'm wondering what you can tell the business community about what it will be like being a business owner or operator in the city under you.
I mean, the business community will be very happy under a Walsh administration. You know, I think it's important. What keeps our city going is the businesses in the city. I want to continue to create new businesses. I'm proposing an Office of Business Development, which we don't have in the city now. We do have the BRA, and businesses do go there to get permitting and to build buildings and to bring in new industry. But we don't go out and attract new business. So I think the first thing I want to let people know is that it's important to continue to create our economy and move our economy forward. Secondly, as far as the permitting process, we hear that issue all the time. We even hear that issue with a small restaurant opening in a neighborhood where you have to go to permitting, and then after it's all done, you have to kind of wait for the fire department to come out and sign off on the final permit. We have to streamline these processes. You know, the NHL, the National Hockey League, came to Boston several years ago with the Winter Classic. They needed 91 permits and licenses to get to the ability to able to perform the Winter Classic at Fenway Park. We should be promoting the Winter Classic and trying to get these venues to Boston and not discouraging them from coming to Boston. So, you know, those are things that I'm going to work on and talk about, and actually decide when I become mayor that we're going to do our best to, not do our best, we're going to change the process. There's no reason not to have permitting. Also, if you are going to a restaurant in downtown Boston, you can't sit outside unless you order food. I mean, we're probably one of the only cities in the world that allows that. No, somebody walking down, you know, Boylston and Newberry, or even in Dorchester, we have a restaurant there, 224 Boston Street. People should be able to come and enjoy a drink if they want outside and not have to order food. I think we have to look at some of these things and say, you know, are we making any sense here?
And small but important quality of life issues that people will often care about as much as things like education and safety. Marty Walsh is a state representative. He's also one of the two candidates for mayor of Boston to have won the preliminary election last night. He and John Connolly are the finalists. Marty Walsh has been joining us from the State House as he stepped out of a formal session in which one of the votes happening is whether or not to repeal the state tech tax. Marty, thank you so much for making time for us and stepping out of that for us.
And thank you for having me on the radio today. I appreciate it. I look forward to coming on again.
And this is Radio Boston. We are live right outside the Boston Public Library in Copley Square. Joining us now is John Barros. He finished with 8% of the vote last night, not enough to move forward to the general election. He won the endorsement of the Boston Globe and lots of backing here in the city, and he joins us now. John Barros, thanks a lot for joining us. Good to see you.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
What do you expect to see in the next 6 weeks in this contest between Marty Walsh and John Connolly?
Well, I expect Marty to continue to talk about his legislative history. He's got an impressive history. I think he'll continue to distance himself from being the candidate that is solely beholden to the unions. He has a little bit of track record, and he could talk about that. I expect that John Connolly, as he's begun to do this morning, will continue to talk about his coalition across the city, and a multiracial, multiethnic coalition. And they will continue to have to go, I think, into more detail about their policies. It's no longer the headlines. It's no longer what they're going to do, but how they're going to do it.
You know, in many ways, these guys are alike in some ways. The website Universal Hub today quipped in a headline, Boston to get its first Irish-American mayor in 20 years. Tongue-in-cheek, of course. But there were no minority candidates that made it through to the final round. Is that important?
Well, is it important? It's important that the issues that are being talked about are talked about, you know, that include all neighborhoods, all communities. You know, I heard the conversations talk. The conversation has changed. John Connolly was here this morning, and he started talking about the violence. He started talking about Mipson, who was a young man that was killed on Warren Ave, and how we might, as a city, need to think about how we're valuing different lives, particularly that of African-American and Latino children. You know, that's different. It's different. It's a different conversation than John started with on his campaign. And so that's changed. And so that means that community is present. Marty Walsh talked about the diversity on the police department. He talked about the importance of making sure that Boston's inclusive, that we have safe neighborhoods, and that the guns are off the street. And when we talk about violence, there are three neighborhoods that are plagued by 80% of the violence. It's Dorchester, Roxbury, Mattapan. That means that that's present. In many ways, we have two candidates that, because of the election process, with 12 of us in it, are now talking about different parts of Boston and different issues than they started with.
John Barris, there was some talk that in many ways the preliminary was a bounty of riches. You know, there were 12 candidates, many of them very bright, very accomplished, very committed and passionate about Boston. And we even heard John Connolly today praising so many of you who didn't make it, but he thinks that he hopes you will continue in some aspect. What do you hope that you and the other people who didn't make it to the finalists will do now? Do you hope you are somehow involved in the new mayoral administration?
You know, I ran with a bunch of committed people to Boston. There's no question in my mind. And I think most of us will stay involved. We don't need political office to stay involved. I surely didn't need political office to stay involved in the last two decades here in Boston, helping to turn around one of the sections that were most challenged in our city. And I don't think others need that. So we will be involved in. I don't necessarily think we need to be in the administration to do that. There are tons of ways to be involved in this city, and I'm committed to doing that, and I'm sure a lot of others are.
One last question. Of the 12 candidates in the preliminary, half were minorities. And as you know, there had been a debate a few weeks ago about whether many of them should just drop out and let Charlotte Golar Richie, who ultimately came in third, run on her own. That didn't happen. Do you have any regrets about that? Do you wish that maybe that had happened?
You know, I wished Marty Walsh would have dropped out and given me his votes. That's what I wish. You know, it's great to think about people dropping out and supporting others, but really that happened yesterday. Yesterday we had voters come out and cast their vote, and that's how democracy works. And I'm proud that I live in a city where we had a number of candidates of color. We had good candidates, and Boston should be proud of that.
That's John Barros. He was the longtime head of the Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative. He was one of the 12 candidates for mayor, not one of the winners, but many people hope he will have some involvement in the administration. John, thanks for joining us here for our live broadcast in Coffin Square.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John. And listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. The indie rock band The Low Anthem is setting up right to my right. They're going to be performing live in Copley Square. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.